Good morning. It's 9:33. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And this is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this morning I am honored to be in the studio with Peter Phillips of Project Censor. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Teresa. Thanks for having me on.
And I'm holding a copy of Censored 2006, which weighs about a ton. And
that's the biggest book we've ever done. It's like, there's more news that hasn't been covered.
And and it's very much something that you need to have. And if we hadn't just done Pledge Drive, I would be doing this and saying, well, you can get a copy, and I would really be jacking up the price on it, too. But let's see. It's published by Seven Stories Press. And how much is it going for?
$18.95.
So if you got $20, you need to go down to Laughing Horse Books on 37th and Southeast Division, or Powell's downtown in various locations. The reason I mention those two is not because I have any connection to them, but Laughing Horse is a collective that puts together books like this one, just to make them available for you and try to improve your mind. And Powell's has a union. So I'll just keep pumping, pals.
And we'll be at Portland State tonight.
Oh,
7
okay.
o'clock.
All right.
And we'll have some books there as well.
I should have asked you that before. Well, in case you've been busy this morning, or if you just tuned in, then you may not have heard that Miss Harriet Myers has withdrawn her nomination as Supreme Court Justice. And Bush, they say, has accepted her withdrawal, although I'm sure that they all talked about it quite seriously after Drugs Limbaugh put her down and wouldn't support it. So that's neither here nor there at the moment, although we may bring it up later. Censored 2006, I just want to pass on some of the topics that come up in the chapter contents, and the contents, and it will give you an idea of why you need to have this. It starts with the top 25 stories of 2004 and 2005. And it has great authors. It's really an easy read. And the first few of those are Bush administration moves to eliminate open government. Number two, media coverage fails in Iraq, Fallujah, and the civilian death toll. Number three, another year of distorted election coverage. Number four, surveillance society quietly moves in. You know, your head would spin if I read all of these. But all of these things are affecting your life very strongly right now. I was talking just before we came in with Peter Phillips about the election fraud, which to me has been a very shocking thing. And it seems that the American public are not prepared to accept the fact that this is a deeply corrupt society, sufficiently corrupt that we will accept a fraudulent election and just take two fraudulent presidential elections. And then even after the evidence comes out, we'll just accept it the way it is. And even though we have had this vast difference between exit polls, and what do you have to say about that, Mr. Phillips?
Well, we did not have
the fraud bell.
Edison Media and Matosky International raw data of the 13,000 exit poll interviews in the 2004 election. We didn't have that data until after the inauguration. So we weren't able to, even though we knew early on that the exit polls didn't match the end results, we weren't able to really look at the data until later. So Steve Friedman, Dennis Liu, professors at different universities, Cal Poly, Penn State, and other researchers around the country, they look at this data and were able to say that in Colorado, Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nevada, New Mexico, and Ohio.
Just here and there.
The exit polls were dynamically different than what the end results would be. So that cumulatively, Kerry, according to the exit polls, won the election by 5 million votes. Bush ended up officially winning the election by 3 million votes. That's an 8 million vote discrepancy. Now, the chances that the exit polls would be that wrong are in excess of 100,000 to 1. Overall, and in many states, it's millions to one. I mean, it's just, 9% difference.
Oh, there you go, bringing science
in New Hampshire.
It.
I mean, it's just not possible because, few interviews, exit polls are just within 1%. So if you interview somebody, they're exiting from having just polled, they'll say, who did you vote for? It's not like, who might you vote for? Did you vote? Will you vote? This is, who did you vote for 5 minutes ago? So they're just absolutely accurate. And, you know, there could be a small variance, 0.5%, that kind of thing. But we're seeing variations in the 6%, 7%, 8%, 9% range that's statistically impossible. And initially that was said that, well, there must have been more Kerry voters that responded on the polls than there were Bush voters. Now that we've seen the data, we know that's not true.
And how could it have been true anyway? It's as if inductive logic just flies out the window and all these years of exit polling results being accurate mean nothing. And then we were talking about, and you reminded me...
Polls can sometimes be in error. But in this case, it's statistically impossible. And if a poll is in error, it will vary from one side to the other. And maybe the questions had some variability to them or something like that. In this case, they were only in error in favor of Bush. And they were only in error... almost in every case, in places where there was no paper trail on the voting machines.
And that's what I like about Censored 2006, is it brings that sort of summary to the situation. Now, since then, the Conyers report has come out, and you can get that online. You can have all the details and all the numbers, and you can convince yourself. But we were talking about the Ukraine, which I couldn't remember the name of it. I was going, you know that country in Eastern Europe? The Ukraine had an election, and there was this tremendous difference between the exit polls and the results. And what happened?
The U.S. pressured for a new election, and there was world pressure to have it happen. It happens here in the U.S. It's just ignored. The corporate media doesn't want to talk about it, and we go on as if nothing happened. I mean, even Carter came forward 2 weeks ago and said that Gore won the election in 2000. And we now know that the numbers in Florida, he did win that election by over 100,000 votes. But when those numbers came out, it was a week after 9/11. So 9/11 dominated the news. It got very minor coverage. Gore won the election in 2000. And we don't have a method in the country to go, wait a minute, let's have another election. Let's go back. Let's rethink this. Mm-hmm. And we're unable to say at this point, because even the Carter-Baker Commission, they don't want to go there and say, well, there was fraud in the last election. I mean, we have voting machine companies. ESS, Diebold, Sequoia, that own the voting machines and have proprietary rights. We can't go in and look at the codes. A military defense contractor, SAIC, which is the seventh largest defense contractor in the U.S., with two former directors of the CIA on their board and the former Joint Chiefs of Staff and National Security Council. This is a board of directors of a company. They're the ones that did the security systems for Diebold. And we can't go in and look and see how if those security systems were accessed or if they were in some way manipulated.
And so what I want to say is, okay, we've got elections coming up, and that means I want international observers. I want Ukrainians, okay? I want Canadians. I want them to be right there.
Chavez offered to send people in from Venezuela to observe the election.
Excellent. We need that. We need all paper. I don't care how long it takes to count them. But we're not hearing a call for that because, well, as Noam Chomsky has pointed out, we're suffering from mind control. And we cannot conceive that that is necessary or that we have been defrauded or that the executive branch that we now have in power is simply illegitimate. Simply illegitimate.
There's something I like to talk about in that context, and that is, you know, we often call the corporate media, NBC, ABC, CNN, the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not mainstream. KBOO is mainstream. And independent news, papers, sources, we're mainstream. We're the ones talking to the mainstream American people about what the powerful are doing in our society. Corporate media is giving us a top-down propaganda model of control and information that's narrowly defined in terms of what they want us to know. And basically the message is shut up and go shopping. And, you know, that's it.
I want a bumper sticker that says that.
Exactly. I mean... And there's something that's interesting that's happened in terms of the corporate media, the Big Ten, because we looked at their board of directors 10 years ago, and then we just did it again this past summer. And what we found is that the major defense contractors, the ones that are very dependent upon government contracting, like Lockheed Martin with 75% of their income coming from government contracts, they are embedded now, literally, on the boards of directors of the New York Times, the Carlyle Group is there. The Washington Post has Lockheed Martin. The GE, which is a defense contractor, has Bechtel on their board. Halliburton is on ABC, and Lockheed Martin is on Gannett. So we're seeing these core military contractors, the people who have benefited the most from post-9/11 invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq and the Patriot Act, because they're getting the contracts for that. They're the ones that are embedded in, and really on the boards of directors of the big media groups in the country, and they're the ones hiring PR firms to spin the news, to present news the way they want us to see it.
And they even present wholly produced video clips to produce that so-called
exactly.
news, and we watch
yeah.
that as news.
So that so news becomes what the corporate media tells you it is.
And you could have read that on previous censored publications, I believe. Just a few years ago, you had a story on that.
Exactly. That was the whole, that Fox News firing of Steve Wilson and Jane Akre when they tried to cover the bovine growth hormone in milk, and they lost their jobs over it, and Fox basically said, we'll tell you what the news is. You don't get to make up your own mind about it. And then they lost, Fox lost the lawsuit in Florida. They were supposed to pay Steve and Jane $425,000 because of a whistleblower suit. They appealed. They won the appeal based upon the fact that they claimed that it wasn't against the law to lie to the public. And technically, it's not. I mean, there's FCC rules, but it's not against the law. So,
oh, I'm going to go nuts then. Hey, the moon is made of green cheese. That's
so
incredible.
So there's this kind of abdication of the First Amendment and within corporate media to tell us the truth, to question the powerful, and really to give us this top-down perspective of what's going on. And that plays over into Iraq. It plays over into corporate environmental concerns. It plays into literally everything that's on the news today from corporate media.
Corporate media, there's so much to say about it, but one tiny aspect of it that I've begun to notice over the last few years is that the people who are selected to do news reporting and even analysis are frequently relatively ignorant of history. They reveal this in the things that they say about our wars. Well, for example, one of your stories is about Fallujah, and that reminds me of Abu Ghraib and all of the nonsense that well, actually, the vicious horror that's been going on in our little imperial illegal war in Iraq. And we're talking about torture in Abu Ghraib and all the other places, which are pretty much the same forms of torture. Of course, of course, they're centrally connected. Of course, they're governed and set up by U.S. government because it's the same sort of torture that was done under the Phoenix Program in the Vietnam War. And then you have a story also on the vast war crime that was committed against the people of Fallujah. And this is another story that I've noticed in looking at international media that the rest of the world knows about and condemns the U.S. for, condemns every one of you for allowing it to happen and not rising up and overthrowing this government for the horror that happened in Fallujah. And this is, you know, some small part of it is in Censored 2006. I wonder if you could expand on that, Peter.
Well, this is Dar Jamal writing from Fallujah after interviewing families there. And it's coverage that's not the embedded reporters. I mean, they don't even get to see what's happening. And if they do, it gets censored by the media that they're writing about, by the military. So Fallujah is a city of 300,000 people. And we invaded there in the middle of last summer, or a year ago last summer, and got all shot up. And so the 82nd Airborne surrounded it, and they basically kept the city isolated. And then they said, okay, people need to leave because we're going to invade. We're going to come after the insurgents. But they wouldn't allow males between 15 and 45 to leave. So women and children and elderly were able to get out, but 50,000 people remained in that city. And then we invaded. And it was like a free fire zone. We broke into literally every building. We shot up the entire place. Depleted uranium is left there permanently to contaminate the city forever. And a third of the buildings were destroyed. The water system was shut down. Electricity, food, everything was abandoned. And we killed several thousand people.
And it was obviously an attempt at collective punishment. It's like,
it was collective repression. We've done the same thing in Tal Afar and other cities over on the Syrian border. This is war crimes. War crimes, according to Marjorie Cohen, who's Professor Thomas Jefferson School of Law, National Lawyers Guild. And we've had indictments from criminal groups around the world, but we don't play with the International Criminal Court. And so there's really no way to correct this. And the American people don't know the degree to which this is happening. There's been a minimum of close to 150,000 civilian deaths in Iraq since we've invaded. And we know that a year ago was 100,000 because we had a really good study from Johns Hopkins University. Les Roberts, an investigator, went over. They hired students. They went out and they surveyed families all across Iraq to look at the pre-invasion, post-invasion death rates within the families. And they came up statistically that there was at least a minimum of 100,000 civilian deaths, well over half of whom were women and children, most by aerial bombing. So this is not the soldiers on the ground going in and massacring families. This is aerial bombardment from airplanes using napalm weapons, which have been banned by the United Nations. And, you know, people just dying in their homes, literally. And half of these are women and kids. So that's in the papers all over the world. That's in London. That's in France. That's in Greece. That's in Rome.
And they know what monsters we are.
And they know it. And here it's denied. They covered that story. The New York Times covered the story, and they started out by saying the Pentagon denies that there's any factual basis to the study that was done by Johns Hopkins University, and published in the Lancet Medical Journal in Great Britain. It's a peer-reviewed medical journal. So the methods were solid. The research was good. And it documents the degrees of civilian deaths. Robert Fisk, just last month, wrote a really great, it was a horrific article about the morgue in Baghdad. He says, reporters don't go there. This is, you know, and he goes there, and there's at least 1,000 civilians brought in every month, just in Baghdad. So the degrees to which this is ongoing, I mean, and that we've helped perpetuate, it is just amazing. And those kinds of stories simply aren't told in the American corporate media.
It works, you know, and even the little big nets are not told. I remember seeing a picture on the web from Fallujah, and, you know, sometimes a picture can tell a story. And there was a man, obviously he was crossing the street because you could see the groceries that he was carrying were spilled out in front of him, and his chest had been ripped open by, oh, probably a 50 caliber sniper shot. And on top of him, wearing a lacy pink dress, was a 5-year-old girl, and just an excellently, wonderfully accurate sniper shot had taken out most of her head. And this is the sort of monstrosity the world knows about. And, you know, she must have run after her daddy or her uncle or whoever it was when he fell. And, you know, our soldiers who were trained and encouraged and joked and cajoled into doing that sort of horrible thing will come back and they'll realize they won't even be able to think about it. They can't. They don't want to talk about it. They're messed up for the rest of their lives.
From Iraq War I, we have a 50% veteran disability rate. 30,000 of those veterans have died since then. Many are contaminated with depleted uranium in their bodies and don't even know it. And we're doing the same thing all over again. At least last year, you know, Juan Gonzalez, New York Daily News, tested 9 veterans. They came back with a 44-42nd in New York, found that 4 were contaminated with depleted uranium. This is gene-damaging material that's going to be in your body literally forever.
It really is.
It doesn't pass away.
Yeah, that's sort of transuranic. Dr. John Goffman determined that 1/40,000th of an ounce is sufficient to break chromosomes and cause tumors, and it does a lot more than that. It's active chemically as well. So much to say about depleted uranium, of course, and that has been in past copies of Censored. You're listening to Press Watch. The time is 9:51. I'm talking with Peter Phillips of Project Censored, and very proud to have him here in the KBOO studios. If you have comments on the topics that we have been bringing up, the number to call is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and you can speak with Peter Phillips. I also wanted to bring up the attitude of this administration as it is revealed in Censored 2006 and in just the events of this year. I was talking earlier about malign neglect. Malign neglect about global warming. Malign neglect about bird flu. Malign neglect against the people of New Orleans after Katrina. The malign neglect and the non-conversion of the oil economy as we pass peak oil. And there's so much more to say about that. Everything has to be in the service of the corporations, including the 42,000 people who are killed every year commuting in automobiles. Why do we accept that?
We don't know the difference. Corporate media doesn't tell us. I mean, there were 60 of the nation's top scientists 2 years ago, 20 Nobel laureates, leading medical experts that signed a letter accusing the Bush administration of distorting scientific facts. And that doesn't make the news. It's in the censorship news. It's in the Environmental Newswire. It's not in the New York Times.
Which is bizarre.
It's not on Fox. It's not on television.
It's not a hard case to make. I mean, they set up whole programs to distort the news.
Blacklisting scientists, firing people in the EPA who challenge the corporate position. This is widespread in government. And violations of the Clean Air Act. So it's corporate America go forward, and we're not going to tell you about what's happening. And a corporation actually can even disclose that they've been in violation of the law, and it becomes private. It's not available under the Freedom of Information Act. And there's a whole disclosure how they've been blocking Freedom of Information Act requests in all departments, not just the Pentagon, not just the State Department,
after
but across the board.
After things have been disclosed, after they've been in the press, and then they become secret.
If a corporation says, yeah, we've been polluting, and we're sorry, we're going to try to mitigate it, and they tell the EPA that, then that becomes private proprietary information, and it can't be released through a Freedom of Information Act request.
This is so bizarre. Well, we do have some callers. And so let's go to caller number one. Hi, you're on the air on KBOO.
Hi. Thank you both for this program. It's compelling and unfortunately bad for the blood pressure. But my question to Mr. Phillips is, I wondered if Project Censored has had any experience with direct contact with the 535 members of Congress. In other words, have you tried to do direct outreach to them and present them with your findings?
We do a press release. The book comes out. We do press releases every year. One of our national judges is in Congress, Cynthia McKinney. So people are aware of Censored's work. I mean, there's 200 researchers at the university, faculty and students, that review thousands of news stories, narrow those down. We're doing monthly postings now called Real News, so that we're basically saying to the corporate media, here's the stories you're not covering. These are the ones that will be in our book next year. Why don't you guys go out and cover it, do your job? And that hasn't produced results of coverage in corporate media, but so it's open and available. But I don't know that we have not systematically sent a book to every member of Congress.
Right. Well, you know, I realize that that's part of our responsibility as citizens, to pick up the phone or contact our own members of Congress and point them in your direction. But so are you saying that the only one out of the 535 that you have any kind of dialogue with over your findings is Cynthia McKinney?
Well, Lynn Woolsey is the congressperson from our district in Sonoma County,
right,
and is very supportive. Dennis Kucinich is fully aware. In fact, he was at the university a few years ago and knows about Project Censored. So there are certainly some. Bernie Sanders is aware. There are certainly some that are aware of the work that we do. I think many are aware of the degree to which the election was stolen in the Democrats and the Republicans. They're in denial. We had 80 million people that didn't vote in the last election, so they're very worried that it's going to slip below 50%, you know, and will be the laughingstock of democracies worldwide, and in the sense that we even have a democracy anymore. And so they're trying to shore that up, and they want to say they will have paper trails and that we'll have credibility. But you have two parties, literally, that are dominated by corporate money.
Yeah.
Even though there's some strong grassroots movements, progressive movements within the Democrats and even within Republicans, they're very ineffective at this point in making changes in Washington and at the national level. You have to raise millions of dollars to run for Congress, and to do that, you need to get money from corporations, and that's become, you know, elections, a dollar election based process that really needs to be reversed if we're going to maintain any kind of democratic process in the U.S. where the people have some say.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Once again, you're listening to Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm speaking with Peter Phillips. And by the way, if you'd like more information about this, you should get on the web and pull up www.projectcensored.org. And if you'd like to donate to the effort, you could call 707 664-2500, and I'll bet that's on projectcensored.org, so I won't repeat it. We have another caller. Hi, you're on KBOO.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the program. It occurs to me, looking at what's going on and the way the news is suppressed, that what is really happening, the overall picture, the way I see it, is systematic genocide.
It sounds like preamp distortion. Are you using a speakerphone?
I'm using a cell phone.
Okay. Go ahead, then. I'm sorry.
And anyway, that's what it all seems, all the pieces seem to fall in that pattern and come up with that answer to me, is systematic genocide across the entire globe. So that's basically all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Genocide is a word of deliberate loss and deliberate attack on people. It's a legal word in the UN. But where we have systematic loss of life from corporate profit-taking, whether it's in the Congo or it's in Nigeria or it's in the U.S., that, in a broad sense, is genocidal. And we're fully aware of that in terms of the environmental damages that are going on worldwide, but then also the deliberate profit-taking from war. We have, major corporations that have benefited from the invasion of Iraq. So Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman both had 7 and 8 individuals from their corporations who were very active in the Project for New American Century in 98 and 99, writing a plan for U.S. military global domination of the world. And they will profit from that, and they have been profiting from that. Forward deployment of U.S. troops and bases all over the world. We now have 700-plus bases in the world. And this was written out. This was not, some conspiracy model. This is what the global dominance group, now in power in the U.S., and there were Democrats in there as well, are saying that we are militarily strong. We are going to dominate the world by using our military everywhere in the world. We want to have high-tech weapons from space, encircle China to prevent China becoming our major rival, continue to control the oil market internationally, and to dominate economic and political processes in the world. And if people don't want to go along, we will use our military to force them to.
KBOO Portland, it's 10 o'clock, and you're listening to Press Watch with Peter Phillips, and I'm Teresa Mitchell. Go on, caller, do you have more to say? Oh, okay. Number to call if you have comments about Censored 2006 and the topics that we've been bringing up here is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. One of the things that is brought up in the, once again, very thick Censored 2006 is the surveillance society and surveillance of dissonance. And I'm glad to see some coverage of this sort of thing. I've been a dissenter for a while, I guess, in various ways. I used to be more active when I lived in Austin, Texas, organizing students there against the infiltration of the CIA into academia, for example, and some anti-war efforts. And I remember that harassment started getting so thick that it got to be not a daily thing, but it became part of my life, people coming up and photographing me in front of my house, people going through the trash wearing suits and ties, people pulling up in old Chevys across the street, pretending to read a newspaper and taking off like a shot when you approach someone, all that sort of thing. And so this is the sort of thing that you can't really talk to people about because, like the fraudulent elections, people don't want to believe that the United States has little pools and eddies in its government in which people will act so heinously. I believe that I had stirred up some elements of the World Anti-Communist League called the Christian Anti-Communist League, although I can't be absolutely sure about it, although they sent me a letter. And the only thing that stopped it was when I went very openly to a loud communist in Houston. And I bought a pistol. That stopped it. I didn't see those guys anymore. But it happens, and the surveillance society, well, it leads to that sort of abuse. I mean, that's what it's for, actually, is to abuse, intimidate, and eliminate and marginalize people who dissent. And it's all dressed up always as looking out for terrorists. But, I don't believe in terrorism. think it's like Santa Claus. We're supposed to, you know, certain classes of people are supposed to believe in Santa Claus. Works out well for them. And I'm, you know, frankly, I don't worry about terrorists from day to day. I work in the transportation industry. We've been given all sorts of terrorist alerts, and I'm a bus driver, actually, and our our whole place has been locked up. There are little signs everywhere. One that cracks me up says, remember, let's see, there's an acronym they're using. I can't remember what the acronym is, but it was followed by SOP, which I suppose I'm supposed to have been in the military, although I wasn't ever. And I think that stands for Standard Operating Procedure. So it says,
generally,
remember tips per SOP, remember tips per SOP. You know, it's like we'll all become these strange little zombies who expect Osama bin Laden to come crashing through the fence with a bomb or something. It's just absurd.
I just got the idea is to keep us scared.
Exactly.
And it's not just you and me, Teresa, or the people listening to this. The focus of being scared has been on the American upper class policy elite, the Council of Foreign Relations members, the Trilateral Commission, the corporate boards of directors. They're the ones that were most afraid and most upset by 9/11. And they're the ones that supported, and in Congress, even our liberal Congresswoman, Lynn Woolsey, came back after 9/11 and said, well, she had voted for the Patriot Act because they tried to kill me. That plane that went down in Pennsylvania was supposed to hit the Capitol building. And elites took it very personal. The symbolic attack on the World Trade Centers and the collapse of those centers, killing the 3,000 people, was symbolic to elites because they've all been there. They all were very aware of it. So this fear, protect us from, have the government protect us from terrorists externally, has created a policy level change and kind of a united upper class in the country that are it's the Council of Foreign Relations that really sets the foreign agenda. And all of those people were really upset, and they bought into this idea that 19, you know, terrorists directed by a guy in a cave in Afghanistan pulled that whole event off. And that's basically what the conspiracy model of the 9/11 Commission report presented. But in fact, there's huge, major gaps in that story. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That we just don't know the full truth.
And isn't it bizarre how well fear works? I mean, I don't mean to sneer. I can't think clearly when I'm in a panic either. I get flighty and flappy, and I don't know what I'm doing. But if you look at 911 outside the context of fear, here we have this attack by a group of people who were identified by the government. But you have a crime that was committed. The crime scene was carted away and put under guard. The perpetrators were announced and never tried. The official story...
Six of whom are still alive.
That's another... Yes, that's...
So the major... I mean, there's six of the 19 hijackers who are still alive. So it's been said, well, somebody stole their identity, which may be true, but that has never come forward. The biggest problem, and we had seven of our students, we looked at all the 9/11 research last fall and spring, and we wrote a chapter on the unanswered questions of 9/11. We looked at the 9/11 Commission report. We looked at David Ray Griffin's work on the new Pearl Harbor book and his Lies and Distortions and a number of others, the timeline and all the major works. And we came to the conclusion there's still some major problems with the government's 9/11 conspiracy model. One of the biggest problems is the collapse of Building 7, which was a 42-story steel-structured building that wasn't hit by an airplane, that collapsed in its own footprint at 5 o'clock on 9/11.
Rather neatly.
Rather neatly, and even the commentators at times said, wow, that looked like a controlled explosion, demolition. And fire and engineering can't explain it. I mean, fires in a building, we had that big fire in Madrid where the whole building was gutted, but the steel structure stayed up. Fires, just fires in a building do not bring a steel structure building down. And it's just never happened before. And in this case, it just completely imploded in its own footprint. It's, by all evidence, a demolition. Unexplained. 9/11 Commission report doesn't even talk about it. Fire and engineering says it shouldn't have fallen down. FEMA can't explain why it fell down. And all the evidence was carted away.
That is so bizarre. It really was. It's under guard now.
Exactly.
You can't go get samples.
You can't go get samples. So all the stuff about Atta and the $100,000 he got from Pakistan, all the material, and we now know about Reddy Abel, which was following Muhammad Atta, and they had Senate hearings on that last month, and the military,
Abel
army...
Danger. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They were following him. They tried to tell the FBI we had a terrorist here, that he was organizing an attack, and they were ordered by the Pentagon to destroy all their evidence. And so the major that talked before the Senate hearings a month ago, I've looked at the transcripts, he now works for Lockheed Martin and does investigative work in Iraq and interrogations. But he testified that they knew that Muhammad Atta was a terrorist, and they tried to report that, and they were ordered the Pentagon to destroy all the evidence. I don't know who did or who may have helped facilitate 9/11. I don't like to speculate. I don't want to get into wild theories, and there's plenty of them out there.
But the official story just doesn't work.
The official story doesn't work. The put options, the fact that Mossad agents were living next to Muhammad Atta in Florida...
Clipping up the FAA tapes and distributing them to different waste baskets.
The Flight 77, which came in from the one that hit the Pentagon, came in from the west, flies over Washington, does at 10,000 feet, does a spiral descent to ground level, and then hits the only vacant part of the Pentagon. Just that maneuver is extremely difficult. Even seasoned pilots are unable to do that.
Well, how would you do it without a G-suit? Your blood would rush to your head. You'd lose consciousness.
Well, I can't. I don't know. You can do a spiral descent with an airplane and keep consciousness, but it was highly unlikely. It's just there's no explanation for how these things happened that fit, certainly fit the 9/11 Commission Court. They didn't want to talk about it. So whether it's the put options or the ongoing war games that were happening that day, or that some of the terrorists are still alive, or all the pre-warnings... those are major problems. And this is one of those concepts, kind of like voter fraud, that we call it, it's a threshold concept. You know, it serves that dark closet with these really scary images inside.
I like that. A threshold
concept. And you have
concept.
To open the door and cross the threshold to really face the truth and the reality of it. And it's extremely difficult for people to even psychologically consider that someone, you know, some group of people may have helped facilitate the attack on 9/11. Some group of people may have stolen the last election. And it wouldn't have been very many. I mean, a small number of people in a room with computers could have hacked into the voting machines across the country. They were hackable. They still are. And, you know, so it doesn't have to be this widespread, vast government conspiracy. It can be just a small group of mercenaries involved in making things happen. Which has occurred, and we're at that level where we can't imagine that could even be available, or that someone would even do that. And the questions that emerge, that's where we have to go. We have to ask those questions. I don't have answers. I don't know who's involved, but we certainly know who benefited from 9/11, who's benefited from Bush staying in office, and which companies have had the greatest advantage from that. So that gives us some parameters of understanding of who the winners are and who the losers are in this process.
You know, it's funny, I've been doing the news you're not supposed to know since I started in Austin in the mid-late 80s, and I finally got to the point where it's like, okay, we're corrupt. I mean, that's just the way it is, but that's a long way from that threshold you're talking about. We have callers. The number to call if you'd like to comment, 503-231-8187, times 1012. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here with Peter Phillips of Project Censored. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I was at a meeting last night with Mr. Phillips and enjoyed it very much and extremely informative. But are you going to announce at the end of the program now? I know I bought a book last night. And I want to send more of these around to my family and friends. And is there any place that we can, say, order these books, or do we have to attend a meeting? I know Portland State has one tonight, but I'm not able to come. Are you going to announce this at the end of your program, or are we able to get? Am I able to get this information right now?
Well, you can go online at projectcensor.org and order the book right now, and it'll be shipped to you in, tomorrow, actually.
Okay.
And but all the bookstores, independent bookstores, and the big chains carry the censored book.
Oh, great!
So you can buy that. You can buy it in your local bookstore. It's out everywhere.
And I just want to make sure they have these. And I cannot tell you how inspired and how much better I feel this morning, knowing you're there, Mr. Phillips.
Well, thank you very much. You were with the Washington County Democratic Council last night.
And
there was a couple hundred of you there. It was really a nice...
so much that there's somebody out you like you out there telling us what we truly need to know.
There's lots of us.
We
don't
are.
Have big microphones, but we can write books, and we can get on stations like KBOO.
Yes.
And we can talk to audiences, and there's researchers all over the country that are doing this work.
Well,
and we're hidden by the corporate media,
yes,
which is where most people get their news. But
correct.
We're there,
well,
and
there.
I appreciate your support.
Do you have a listen, or are you a fan of Lou Dobbs on CNN?
I don't own a television, so...
financial commentator.
Well, I'll tell you, he spills the beans more and more.
Okay, I know who
that.
He is, yeah.
You should have seen the look on his face. It was a blank
thing. Thank you so much, Mr. Phillips. I am so glad I got to hear you last night, and I am certainly going to follow through, I can tell you that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This book is valuable, and I wish that so-called journalists would read it. I am down on the state of journalism in the country generally. I'm certainly, you know, not bigoted enough to apply to every journalist I see, but there's a problem, and part of the problem is people don't know history, and they don't even know current events. Story number five, the introduction to Censored 1999 of the written by the deceased Gary Webb, the suspiciously deceased Gary Webb, touches on that topic. But I thought I'd run through a few more of these topics just to give you an idea of what you can find in the book. Number five, U.S. uses tsunami to military advantage in Southeast Asia. You know, if journalists knew that, and if they knew the correlated story that the corporations associated with the military are also taking advantage of the destroyed areas to build whatever the heck they want, they'd see the same thing happening in New Orleans. Number six, the real oil for a food scam. Hint, has nothing to do with Kofi Annan's kid. Number seven, journalists face unprecedented dangers to life and livelihood. They're being shot to death by our soldiers. Iraqi farmers threatened by Bremer's mandates. Number nine, Iran's new oil trade system challenges U.S. currency. Oh, gee, I wonder what the U.S. will do about that. Number 10, mountaintop removal. How's that grab you? Mountaintop removal. Kablam. Threatens ecosystem and economy. Number 11, mandatory mental screening usurps parental rights. That's right, we're talking about your kid. And it goes on. There's 25 of those topics.
You know that Iran story. 2 years ago, we covered how Saddam Hussein had switched selling oil in dollars to euros. He was the first member of OPEC to do that.
The end great.
And the first thing Bremer did after we invaded and took over the country was switch the sales of Iraqi oil back to dollars. Hundreds of billions of dollars are used worldwide by Japan, China, all countries to buy oil. That keeps the value of the dollar up. If there was to switch to euros, or even begin that switch, we would see hundreds of billions of dollars flooding back to the U.S. and forced inflation. It would be massive. So this is a major, it's not an issue that's talked about. So Iran has now planning to do an oil exchange and start selling their oil in euros and marketing it that way this next year. So part of the saber rattling that's been going on around Iran has been trying to block that change.
And that's the sort of thing that affects you directly. It affects me. I've got this goofy mortgage I use just to get into a house. Now I'm going around to the mortgage broker saying, can I have a 30-year fixed? And they're like, ha, you slacker. What are you talking about? Get out of here. It's not working. But we have callers. And so we'll go to the next caller. Hi, you're on KBOO.
Yes, hello. I wanted to thank Phillips for helping to put this book together. My concern is I really am surprised if it's true that Diebold was responsible for fixing the votes in Florida for this election, and they And they did get sued by the NAACP, and they had to plead guilty. How can a company like that still be in business? I really hate seeing their little name on all the ATMs and all the banks around here, Bank of America and key banks. And it's really discouraging to me.
You know, I know you're directing that to Peter Phillips, but I have to have my own snappy answer, which is, they're there because we have a national shortage of angry torch-bearing mobs.
Well, ESS, Sequoia, and Diebold were the main builders of voting machines in the country. But what's interesting about that is their principal investors are Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and Accenture. And Accenture is the old Arthur Andersen accounting agency. So military contractors have been investing in voting machine companies, and you think, well, maybe that's just because it's a good investment. We're moving in that direction. But maybe there's more to it, and it's SAIC, the one that did the security systems in some of the Diebold machines, which is also a military contractor, and it's all proprietary information, so we aren't able to look at the voting machines other than we know Black Box Voting got a Diebold machine, and hackers were able to get to it into it last April in 20 minutes. So these machines were hackable. So whether Diebold's directly guilty or whether it's external forces hacking into these machines that don't have inadequate security and proprietary security, and they may or may not have known the security codes, you don't need them. You can get in them.
I just love the phrase proprietary information. It's like, this is how public can you get? This is about our voting, right? And proprietary means mine. It's mine. You can't have it. It's mine.
On a related issue, is it true or was this more of a controversial? There was supposedly a fellow who did invent a voting machine who, you know, that did have a very good paper trail, and supposedly he was somehow killed. While he was on getting on a plane or something, and is that true or is that made up?
I don't know anything about that.
I haven't heard anything about that, but I do have this to say: those machines have they're just computers. They have a printer port. You hook up a printer, it prints. I mean, that's all it takes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
And I understand the lines are still busy, so we'll go to the next caller. That opens up one, by the way. The number to call 503-231-8187, and this is Press Watch on KBOO, and we're speaking with Peter Phillips of Project Censored. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty well.
Yeah, I have a question, but real quickly, you know, you're absolutely right. The stuff you're coming up with is totally stuff that should be talked about because it's provable. I mean, if we look at the fact of who benefited from September 11th, I mean, obviously, opium production is up in Afghanistan higher than it was than before we invaded. The oil wells, and I do believe they've capped them off, and you're correct about Saddam with the Euros. I mean, that's pure profit. They were able to shut that off, and that was one of the other major reasons they went in there. But also, if you look at the fact that the firemen, some of the tapes have been released on that, and that's specific to what my question was about, where you had firemen who were talking on the radios about hearing explosions going off. Some of that's been suppressed, but now it's starting to come out. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on that, if you have knowledge of that, and why the government is letting some of that information out.
David Ray Griffin has been talking about that in regards to the collapse of Building 1 and 2 at the World Trade Center. The information we looked at last fall and spring, I'm not quite ready to go there and say that those buildings had demolition in them. I don't know. I can't really figure it out from the evidence we got. The fireman tapes that have been coming out saying that they heard explosions in the building are interesting, but it's difficult to be totally conclusive from that.
Right, I agree.
So I tend to be very conservative on these things and stick with what we do know about Building 7 and the other factual things that are inconsistent with the government's 9/11 report, although I really think David is pretty much right on with most of his material.
Right. Absolutely. One last thing, if you don't mind. What do you think about the fact that the government doesn't seem to have any illusions to who the enemy really is? You got Homeland Security going after gang members. You got strip club owners in Vegas. You would think if it was really about Arab terrorism, that's who they would target. Obviously, they know who the real terrorist is. They're clamping down on American citizens to take away our civil liberties.
Well, that's certainly the side product of the Patriot Act and Homeland Security is the ability to monitor and observe all of us. I mean, they can pull up TRW data, and if you used a credit card for lunch, tell you what you had for lunch yesterday. So that data is available on all of us. It helps protect them. It helps continue a controlled society. We have to be open. We have to speak out. We're not doing anything illegal by using our First Amendment rights, and that's a core to what America is, and we cannot be afraid to do that. And we have to speak out in every way possible, and there's many, many people across the country that do that every day.
Absolutely right. And what is the title of your book one more time?
It's Censored, 2006, Media Democracy in Action, and the 25 Censored Stories. It's from Seven Stories Press. It's available on our website at projectcensored.org or available in bookstores anywhere in Portland or in this area, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Time is 10:24. You're listening to Press Watch, and I believe we have time for another call or two. Number to call 503-231-8187. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I was very excited to hear Mr. Phillips mention the idea of a threshold concept. I think the psychological aspects that underlie what took place and on 9/11 and then the follow-up reaction to it are extremely important, and I've tried to get people interested in talking about the psychology behind this, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest, but I think this idea of threshold concept is exactly what I'm talking about, and I'd like to ask Mr. Phillips what he thinks about the possibility that before they initiated any of this stuff, when they were crafting the Project for a New American Century, if in fact they might have had some experts as consultants that said, look, we think that you can basically do just about anything you want, even if it's blatant, and the American people are going to react in such a way that they're not going to allow themselves to believe that their own government would be involved in something like this, and therefore you will be successful.
I can't speculate on that other than to say that's possible. George Seldes once said when he was writing about fascism in Germany, that you can lie to the people all of the time and they'll believe you when government and corporations and the media cooperate.
Yeah, I just think that I got into conversation with a man who I consider to be very intelligent and who doesn't have much of a love for the way this country's going. And when I pressed him on some of the questions around 9/11, he eventually admitted that he didn't want to believe that our government would do this to its own people. So that was really a wake-up call for me.
Yeah, that's why we really needed to think. It was actually 9 months ago, and I was talking about 9/11, a very personal friend had asked me what I was working on. I said, well, we were researching on 9/11 and the unanswered questions, and they changed the topic. They didn't even want to go there.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
So I brought that up in my men's group, and there's seven of us have been meeting together for 10 years. And Noel Byrne, who's a sociologist in my department, said, well, that's... I said, we need a name for this. I said, this is this sort of standing back, the cognitive dissonance that arises when people don't want to face something. He said, well, maybe threshold concept was a good idea. And so I've written that, and it's in our book. I published Uncommon Dreams about that. And I think that it's a way we can name it and then talk about it as a positive thing in the sense of getting people to realize how fearful it is to think that there would be someone so evil that might be like us, and not just some foreign terrorist, but someone like us that would be engaged in these activities or supportive of these activities.
There's the rub, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult.
Excellent. I really appreciate your work.
Thank you.
You know, one attitude that I've taken, which may sound a little strange, so I'd better explain it carefully, after looking into this sort of thing for years and years, is I don't actually believe in evil. And the reason I don't is the people who do this, you can sit right down with them. They are acting in their interests. They're acting according to their beliefs. They are acting according to the stimuli that they allow themselves in terms of the consequences of their actions, and they are acting in terms of their group concept. And it's a dynamic that works through them, and it's not, you know, and its effects are evil. No doubt about that.
I think you're really right on that, Teresa.
Well, anyway. And I believe we have just enough time for another caller, so if it's okay with you, Peter, then
sure.
We'll do that. It'll have to be a quick call, though, because I want Peter to have a minute to wrap up. So, hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Teresa. Hi. Oh, thanks so much for taking my call. Well, one comment I wanted to make was the military companies that are investors in, like, the voting machines, are they not owned by the Carlyle Group? I think Northrop Grumman is.
Diebold, Carlyle?
They're all in business together with each other in a variety of ways on projects worldwide.
Carlyle owns several of the military, you know, defense corporations that, you know, that would be hand in hand with the Diebold.
Carlyle's able to get big government grants, and then they'll subcontract with other agencies and other military contractors. They all do business with each other.
Right.
So there's a very close relationship between the big groups. And
right,
they all,
right,
particularly
yeah.
the most dependent ones, all had people involved in the Project for New American Century and continue to be involved with the policy planning groups at that level.
And to Teresa, well, I, you know what, it's hard to believe in evil, except that I do believe we do have a little core group in our own country here called the neocons, and I'm beginning to think maybe they're just Satan incarnate.
Well, I think they aimed them. I think they named themselves accurately, the neocons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm gonna let you go because thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. It's 10:29, and so the last few seconds belong to Peter Phillips. Except that I will say projectcensored.org. And what have you got to say?
Well, we're going to be at Portland State tonight. I think in the Smith Room at 7:00, and I hope people come out because I love to talk to these stories. I love to see faces and talk to people directly. We've got, I don't know, 20, 30 books left. Hopefully we'll sell the rest of those. We sold a whole pile of them last night over in Washington County. And so it's nice to have people come out and visit, and so I hope I see you tonight.
Stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine on KBOO Portland.
I love you.